Maybe some of them are sufficiently compact that I could take it as luggage when I go to Europe. And I could, and I've got to go through a voltage conversion, so I've got to worry about 240 volts and 50 hertz versus 60.
Most of the sets don't care.
Okay. So you're saying it'll run on 240 volts, and it'll run on over-the-air broadcast in Heidelberg, Germany, the set that's in your living room right now, with no other conversion required. Wow.
Yeah, there's a whole series of sets that do that. And there's nothing special anymore, because it's all, you know, sense what's coming in and take it apart.
Question? Okay, question we'll get in a second. If my set is that universal, are you telling me if we decide to change the standard used in the United States, if we start becoming more European, that I don't have to buy another set? My current set is going to receive that signal. Is that what you're saying, Eric?
Absolutely not. When ACSC 3 comes around, it takes a whole new set. They actually divide the RF up into physical layers. It's funny what they're doing. If you're interested in reading about it, I'll send you some information.
Yeah, somebody who said question, it sounded like Joe. Over to you, Joe, question mark.
Simple question is going to be, how many millions of people are going to have to buy new converters or new television sets are going to be cut out when this change happens? Dick won't be one of them, will he?
Well, most people don't know that their TV stations might actually go off the air after this auction happens in the spring.
Are we going to another frequency auction where the possibility exists that we're going to eliminate over-the-air broadcast? I'd like to believe that a significant portion of this American public will say, no, I'm not going to let you do that. Are we going down that road again, Eric? Go ahead.
Yes, we are. They're auctioning off another 150 or 200 megahertz. There won't be anything higher than channel 37 or something like that. I forget exactly. But what it means is, now they're talking about repacking the station. That means CBS and ABC may be coming from the same transmitter. You join up with someone else. Actually, if you look at the auction prices, it's ridiculous. It's a reverse auction. Like, if CBS wanted to go completely off the air and just decide that they were going to do just cable, the beginning auction price for their station is $990 million. Anyway, the concept is to repack and condense and basically make crappy pictures in the process. And no, the public is totally unaware of this, and this has been going on for like 2 years now.
Now, Clinton sold a whole lot of frequencies during his administration. Got a whole lot of money that you're going to give me a rough guess as to how much money. Was that one of the factors by which he was able to balance the budget during his administration? It was one of the big sources of money, selling something that can essentially only be sold once, selling something he didn't own, selling something that's publicly owned in theory, those frequencies. So how much money transferred during that action? And once again, was that the major reason that the balance, the budget appeared to be balanced at that time? Over to you, Eric, K2RAW.
Which president are you referring to?
I think it was the Clinton administration, where you had this massive auction of frequencies, particularly cell phone frequencies. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, that's not where the idea came from, but that's when it happened. When Congress got a load of what they got out of that, they got all very happy about it. But yeah, it's the same crap. Was it Wheeler? Well, the guy before him came up with the idea, and Congress liked the idea, and that became an act of Congress. It's mandated, and what they're expecting and what they're going to get are two different things.
In the Clinton administration sale of frequencies, do you have a rough guess as to how many billions of dollars was gained, so to speak, during that transaction?
I, off the top of my head, don't know the number, but I suspect that it's multiple billions of dollars, because, I mean, you've got the big four guys, you know, bidding on this stuff. By the way, the argument is that there's not enough bandwidth. In the meantime, Verizon, AT&T, and DirecTV, and EchoStar especially, are hoarding frequencies that they're not using.
They're holding on to frequencies because they think it's got the future capability as the modulation and demodulation techniques get perfected. So it's like buying land in Florida 100 years ago. You don't know it, but it's going to become valuable.
I don't know if that's their thinking. All I do know is that they do a lot of games like, you may have heard of LTE, or LTE-X is extended, and actually that's the figment of the CEO's imagination of Verizon, because it actually doesn't exist, but they market it.
So, you probably told me, but I don't have a good memory on this, we might change the standards by which we receive digital television in the United States. And if we do change that standard, when is that change likely to take place? Will my current TV set be reverse compatible? Over to you, Eric, K2LIW.
Okay, the target date is 2018. Not that far away. Your current TV set will only work on the current TV transmitters, which there will probably be like one or two of, all playing low-definition stuff so that all the channels can stuff themselves in there. The new system, which is, by the way, completely software-based, so that way, as the technology changes, you don't have to buy a new TV set anymore. You just have to download new firmware. Finally, somebody started thinking about that. They could have done that years ago, but nobody did. And yes, your TV set will become useless, and you'll have to buy a new one. But your new one will more likely be a 4K or possibly even an 8K set. Whether or not you need that, that's a whole other argument.
My current set, you believe, can demodulate QAM. The new standard is not going to be QAM-based? Is that what you're saying, Eric?
No, the new standard is sort of QAM-based. It's more COFDM, but it also has funny interleaves, and they're doing all sorts of stuff that is actually three different RF layers that fit within one another. So that way you can get a bandwidth rate of 25 and 30 megahertz and megabits and 6 megahertz.
Yeah, Rich recognized. I'll get to you in a second there, Rich. We were promised that with the new digital system, we were going to have the exact same range that we used to have with analog.
10 years old.
And that turned out to be a fib, even though it's 10 years old. And now, are we going to have similar range again? And I think you're going to tell me range doesn't matter because over-the-air broadcast is about to be wiped out. Boy, I'm having trouble accepting that one, Eric. It is such a built-in benefit of citizenship in the United States that I can get free television over the air. And you're about to take that away. You and the decision makers are about to take that away from me. I'm going to be dragged kicking and screaming, to quote somebody, out of my...
Taking it away from you. I'm complaining that they're taking it away from you.
Out of my cold, dead right hand. Over to you, Eric.
Yeah, Dick. Well, for those that believe that there's a major bandwidth shortage in this country, they really should have their head examined. That's number one. Number two, yes, they would like for you to pay for your television viewing. That's good for commerce. Some of the other arguments are that now when there's an EAS alert or a storm warning, your cell phone rings off its rear end. That's becoming more important to them than over-the-air emergency broadcast system. But, I don't know. The folks here seem to elect politicians that work totally against their own interests. Get to RWK to adjust.
They're good at it.
So, Figaro, a major decision is going to take place by 2018. I'll bet your Rich is not in favor of that. N2EO, tell us whether you're happy with what Eric is saying. You got it, Rich. K2IW.
Okay, Dick, I don't think anybody is happy with that. We don't have over the air. Myself and Patricia are using Optimum cable. Is that going to be affected, Dick?
For Eric. Yeah, I have a question. Actually, if you have internet, you could watch some of the television, but at least you're not listening to all of those commercials. So, Dick, you're probably going to be like me. I don't watch TV, but I know everything what's happening. Back to you.
So, where Rich is watching Optimum Cable TV, will that change in any way that he cares about in 2018? Will he need a new converter box on top of his set, so to speak, Eric?
No, he's paying for it. So, you know, you're paying for service. You know, you can still get your TV for your old analog TV without a converter box. No, what they will do is, you know, the cable companies get their CFPs one of two ways. Either they get directly fiber from the broadcast or they get it over the air. They will convert it to whatever it is that, you know, it needs to be converted from, and it will work with your current TV set. And by the way, when you hook up your cable box, you're hooking up video cables or an HDMI cable. You're not hooking RF to it, so you don't care whether it's 8VSB or XYZ. Doesn't matter. You're going in video.
With current cable TV, Eric, what percentage of it is analog? What percentage of it is going to stay analog in the next couple of years? Over to you, Eric.
Well, in essence, none of it's analog. But what we call standard definition is what you relate to as being analog. Meaning, it comes out RF channel 3 with a video carrier and an audio carrier. But the cable companies don't actually do that anymore. One of the things that Cablevision has done, so thank you. It used to be that they had to provide you, if you bought basic service, you got the basic channels without having to have a converter box. Well, they want to make sure you're paying for it, so they decided they're going to scramble up. There are other cable companies that don't do that, interestingly enough, like Fios. But what they're feeding in the cable is QAM. And that's what your TV set is seeing if you don't have a converter box. And that's what I meant before, that all TV sets will do QAM. They may not necessarily do DVB-T, but they do QAM. There you go. K2RW, K2J.
If I was a cable subscriber right now, what percentage of it is old-fashioned definition? What percentage is new definition? And I know the new definition has got multiple standards. 1,000 line, 2,000 line, 4,000 line, 8,000 line. So what percentage right now is old definition? What percentage is now new definition? And what is going to be new definition? Over to you, Eric.
All right. If you look on your cable listing or guide, in a lot of cases you'll see Channel 4 HD, Channel 4 Channel 2 HD, Channel 2, and a lot of, you know, if the box knows that you have an HD set, it hides all the SD. But if you have an old-fashioned TV and using that, you hide the HD and you get the standard 4x3 pictures. So, actually, for most of the cable services, there is standard definition on just about everything. And on some channels, it's only standard definition and no high definition. As far as the future high definition formats, 4K and 8K, you're beginning to see 4K sets out there and 4K DVD players, and some 4K content is beginning to come around. So, and then believe it or not, they've actually sold quite a few of them at this point, and that's just at the beginning. But overall, TV sales are down because everybody bought their TV once they got forced into having to buy one.
With most of the current cable companies, which I'm not a subscriber, if I want a higher percentage of HD channels, Do I pay a premium for that service, Eric?
Oh, this is a game with the cable companies and DirecTV and EchoStar plays. I think DirecTV charges you $10 for the ability to get the channels in HD. Fios and I think Fios charges like 15 or whatever it is now. And Cablevision, depending upon what mood they're in, they either charge or don't charge. You know, it depends upon the deal that you make when you buy their service.
The new high definition is either 2K, 4K, or 8K. If I use the exact same definition, the old-fashioned non-high definition, what was it? 525 lines, so to speak? Eric, go ahead.
Well, Dick, it's time for you to catch up with the times and we start talking about pixels instead of lines anymore. Okay. What you call 525 line is actually 252.5 lines, each one being a 60th of a second, or there's two fields that make the whole thing, blah, blah, blah. Right. Now, actually, of that 525 lines, there's only 480 of them that you can actually see. So we tend to talk pixels these days. We'll say that there's 720 lines by 720 pixels across by 480 pixels down. So 720 by 480 is a fairly common number that you hear, and that's standard definition. You with me?
Okay, I think I see the 720 by 480. And when you talk about 2K, is it really 2K by some other number, so to speak? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm surprised we haven't timed out. actually, your high def is 1920 pixels across by 1080 pixels down. That's one form of high def. That's called 1080i, because it's interlaced. It's actually broken up into two fields, each one being transmitted at a 60th, or at least played at a 60th of a second. There's another format of high def called 720p, where there's 1280 pixels on a line and 720 lines or pixels down, which is displayed at a 60th of a second, and there's no interlation. That's what the P stands for, is progressive.
If I'm looking at a 2K progressive and a 2K interlaced picture, am I likely to see any difference, Eric?
Oh, hell yeah. And actually, what you're calling a 2K picture is really what we call 1080p. A 4K picture is actually, it's like 2K by 3K. It's called Ultra HD. A 4K movie format is actually 4096 by 4096. 8K is, 8127 by, I forget. It's taken at a power of 2. So Ultra HD to preserve the aspect ratio is a little bit weird. It's 3,000 pixels on a line by 2,000 pixels down. I don't remember the exact numbers. So stop calling it 2K. Just call it an HD picture and go from there.
You've been calling it 2K, 1K, 2K, 4K. I thought I was picking up your vocabulary. N2EO, go ahead, Rich.
Take N2EO. I know you're on an antenna, but look, I'd like to know from Eric or you if 1080 progressive is available on Optimum. I have to give him a call. I never thought of it because he watches a lot of movies. We have movies on demand. And is that the same as Blu-ray? Back to net.
You got it, Eric. I don't know.
Well, if you're an Optimum subscriber, call them. They have all the information.
What vocabulary should he use to get the right answer? You got to use the right words.
No, I'll try to sell you the moon. I mean, if you know what you want, you just have to ask for it.
Do you feel that you know the right words to ask the question to get a truthful answer, Rich? I'm a little doubtful that I'd be able to do that.
No, that's why I'm asking Eric. I'm sure I'm going to get a salesperson, and I'm sure they're not technical. Back to you, Dick.
The set that I bought, I am guessing it has no capability for 4K or 8K. I'd have to pay roughly twice the bucks to get that capability. Eric, is that what your rough numbers?
You know what, Dick? When you have some time, which I know you don't have too much of, but you pass if you go by Jericho Turnpike and New York Avenue, not too far from where you live, you'll see this big building called Best Buy. Take a walk in there, or go into a PC Richard and look at the different sets. And no, your set is not upgradable. It needs a whole other display and processor and the whole shebang. But just for the fun of it, go into the store and look at the pictures on the wall.
Yeah, I wasn't in that store. I was in another store. I can't think of the name of it right now.
Think to do whatever. Look at a 4K set. They'll have a 4K image playing. If you go to Walt Whitman Mall, go into the Sony store. It's got all the different stuff, including 3D cameras you can buy.
I was in Micro Center, I think it's called, and I saw a whole bunch of sets.
Savage is what you saw.
And what I saw, because the set was 180 pounds lighter than the CRT I owned, where the cabinet has the plastic was completely crumbling and the thing was falling apart. It was becoming a bare CRT and a printed circuit board because it was so old, a Panasonic. I wanted to get rid of it so bad, I went and bought something, knowing it's not the last set I'll ever buy, and I can afford another set. So whatever Micro Center was selling at the time, and they had things a hell of a lot more expensive, this was good enough. I needed to move something because what I had was crumbling around me, Eric.
Yeah, well, Micro Center is not your best choice, but oh well, you did what you did. Now, go into Best Buy and go into PC Richards because they're into consumerism. Micro Center is not. They're into making a maximum profit for selling something as cheap as they possibly can. You'll find that Micro Center is actually more expensive about a lot of things and some other than even Staples on certain things.
You even have 3D capability on your living room, don't you, Eric?
Yes, I do. I use it a bit, not all the time, but enough.
Your cable system will supply you 3D programming almost every day. During the prime time, can you watch a lot of 3D?
There was a time when 3D first came out that there was a lot of content. Not anymore. The 3D stuff is to pay for view movies if you want to pay for movies, but I get my stuff for free, so don't pay for any of it.
So when you watch a movie, much of the time you're watching 3D.
Well, if I can get the movie in 3D, I'll watch it that way.
You're able to get half the movies that way that you feel like watching?
No, I don't know if you've noticed, but through the last, 8, 9 years, 3D's been just about not every movie, but a lot of good sci-fi movies and stuff like that are all on 3D. And kids' movies, too.
Only a certain percentage of the movie theaters, I'm guessing, are showing Star Wars in 3D. Is that true?
Oh, man, if you go see Star Wars, you got to see it not only in 3D, but in IMAX 3D. It's unbelievable. And then after that, you can go see it on a flat screen if you want. But, if you haven't had the experience, it's a good one. But then again, so is the IMAX 3D presentation of the International Space Station.
I think into you.
Go ahead, Rich.
found that one of the best places to shop, especially for that, like Eric said, that not Micro Center, go to Walmart or possibly B&H. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, I've been in those stores. I've seen some of the TVs. At the time, I wasn't paying a lot of attention. And just all of a sudden, I wanted to strike while the iron was hot. I happened to be sitting at Micro Center with my son, who could help me carry out whatever I was willing to buy. And I went and bought something. I didn't spend very much money. I bought something that's close to bottom of the line. But it was a significant improvement over the 1957 Panasonic that was crumbling around me. And it took a forklift to get that television set out of the trunk of my car because it was crumbling so bad. Help you, Eric.
Well, don't feel bad, Dick. I have three Sony, what are they? They're BBRHD70s. They're 32-inch CRTs. They're actually reference monitors, and they weigh 210 pounds apiece.
So moving that must be an interesting task. On top of that, depending on how old the plastic is, in the case of Panasonic, whatever they use for plastic, boy, does that have built-in obsolescence. It turns into powder, literally. Only the CRT had any strength, and even all the plastic that was attached to the CRT was slowly crumbling away.
Yeah, I can understand that, but this is a broadcast monitor. Actually, you'd be jealous the way they build boards in this thing. These sets were designed in 1980. They were originally designed when the standard was 1035 instead of 1080. But it doesn't matter. It follows whatever you put into it. They are analog, and they make gorgeous pictures. I got one where the tube's kind of soft, so I don't use that. I use that for parts. And I got two with tubes in them that look really nice.
So you got four or five CRT, four or five TV sets in your house, and at least two of them are CRTs.
Yeah, most people think I'm nuts, but I'm waiting for the latest version of OLEDs that I can afford, because those look better than the CRTs.
I was led to believe that the black-white ratio of my CRT versus my solid-state display, that I was going to take a significant step back in the dynamic range, visual dynamic range. Doesn't seem that bad, Eric. I don't think I lost much, but maybe I'm not a critical enough watcher.
Well, here's the thing. If you put a ramp into your CRT and you put a ramp into your current TV set, you'll see a little bit of solarization going on because it doesn't quite render the steps linearly, especially down at the bottom. But the ratio of black to white, the contrast range, it's pretty damn close. So a CRT in a blackened room really can't be beat, but some of the LCDs that we have now are getting pretty damn close, that's for sure.
So I'd have to be looking into a blackened room to really see the full dynamic range of my CRT. And I don't blacken all the windows at high noon to watch television, guys.
Julio for Eric.
You got it. I'm not really controlling this, Rich. You got it.
When it comes around to you, Dick, I hope you don't mind me asking questions. If so, I'll just listen. Eric, what do you know about these new projection sets? Because we have a 32-inch, modern set, liquid crystal, I believe it is. I want to move it into another room so my attendants could watch it. And maybe put a large projection set in the den. Over.
Somebody's going to have to repeat that for me. I have a very hard time understanding what he's saying.
He wants to know about current projection sets. There's a bunch of reasons why he would like to have a projection set. If he goes and buys a projection set, do you think he'll be happy?
All right, That's a real good question. It depends on a number of things. Do you have the space for it? Why are you wanting to buy a projection set? You're trying to be a movie theater. Do you have the space for the seating? If you do want to buy a really good projector, and I mean a really good projector, they make some really, really good projectors, but they're not cheap. You know, Texas DLP projectors, you can get them cheap, is like $500-$600. And they're okay, but they're kind of a little checkerboardy looking. You go for the higher edge ones, you know, they're like $1,200, $1,500, $2,000. The ones that I like are, you know, around $3,000. But that's as good as going into a movie theater. The Christie projectors in the movie theaters use the same DLP chips, so they just have a lighter light source. But, you know, it really all depends upon the aesthetics and whether you like looking at TV pictures that look like they have gauze in them or ones that are really pristine. It's all about money. K2RW, K2J.
I could go $2,000, no more than that. Maybe Eric has a brand that he would recommend. Back to that.
Yeah, for $2,000 with a projection set, in the case of an old-fashioned projector of a 16mm or an 8mm movie, for instance, I could put the projector close to the screen and get a small picture, put the projector far from the screen and get a big picture. Assuming I'm using the right kind of screen, can I get a better picture out of a projection set than I would with a modern-day LCD, say, for instance? Is that a possible motivation, even if he's not willing to set up a whole theater with theater seats? Over to you, Eric.
Okay. The things that give you the best results, the LCDs are okay, but they're kind of sucky. A thing called a DLP, digital light projector, is actually micro mirrors mounted on a chip. And the mirrors are actually broken up into a number of pixels and lines, you know, in the horizontal and vertical. So if you've got a DLP chip that's set up at 1920 mirrors across the line, and 1,080 lines of those little mirrors, you're making a mighty pretty picture. Actually, you use three of them, each one going through a filter.
Sounds like a lot of capability, but that projection bulb, that super bright, super white bulb, I'm going to guess it's a little bit expensive to buy and or replace. How many hours is that good for, Eric? Go ahead.
Again, depends upon what you buy. You want to buy a xenon-filled gas discharge bulb that lasts something like 20,000 hours and cost you $150 or $200 to replace, or a tonsillated tungsten filament that's going to burn out on you in, you know, 50 or 60 hours and it's going to cost you like $45 to $50 to replace. It's your choice.
You're pretty much up on the technology. Do you own or do you wish you own a projection system, Eric?
I do, but not for the reasons you might think. You know, we're artists in this house, and sometimes we need to blow up images and trace them and do things like that, and it's excellent for doing stuff like that. It's also really wonderful for laying out PC boards, too.
So you can project a PC board onto something that becomes the equivalent of microfilm or a mask, so to speak? Is that what you're saying?
No, I use it more for inspection. Make sure you've got, you know, proper spacing between traces. You don't have anything flopping over. It's better than sitting there with a loop.
Have you decided that you're about to buy a stereo zoom microscope? I guarantee you can afford it. I guarantee you would appreciate it. You've been avoiding it for some time. I've only been waiting a zillion years to get a real television set. I think you should have a real microscope, Eric.
Well, that may be happening at some point soon. I mean, we've had this discussion already. I mean, the magnifiers I wear, the stereo magnifiers, are very comfortable. You know, I get a couple levels of magnification, and it's served me well so far. But my hands are not quite nearly as able to put a little tiny piece in one place and keep it there.
You have the ability to develop that skill, Eric. There's ways you can rest the palm of your hand against something and you're only moving the fingers. There's ways you can learn to use the right kind of tweezers with the right kind of moat built around the circuit that you're building so you don't lose the parts that go zipping off into space. You have the technology to get around. Even if your hand's a little bit shaky, Eric, I guarantee with the right kind of visualization, you can do a lot more than you think.
No, I'm not saying that I don't get the job done. It's just, I mean, I have the helping hand and the other little devices, which are more of a pain in the neck to set up than they are to use. But, you know, the tweezers. But actually, what I've been doing lately, and I'm trying to find a good way to do this, is actually if I had a 500 or 600 nanometer laser and some really thin film, what I'd like to be able to do is create a sauna mask that I can lay over the board that I'm making, squeegee the sauna paste on it, and then just put the parts down, you know, lift that mask off and push the parts down. I'm not talking about a coated sauna mask. I can do that. That's easy, but it doesn't help you when you want to just squeegee sauna paste down, if you know what I mean.
Yes, I've seen movies of that being done. You can buy a sauna mask paste for each kind of chip you're likely to use, Eric. So one chip at a time, you can do that sauna mask pasting, I think.
That's got to be a royal pain when you've got 100 chips on the board.
Is there no commonality on those chips?
Sure there is, but in different places of the board. Hey, look, I could take my... I mean, what I currently do now is take the hypodermic needle and just put a little bit on each pad and then stuff the part down before I put it in the oven.
And out of curiosity, are you using a kitchen-type oven to do this work, or have you got a specific oven that does the reflow?
No, I got a little piece of garbage toaster oven, which has a couple of thermoses and a little computer connected to it, and it knows how long it needs to take it before it takes it all the way up and then lets it cool down.
If that's done with skill, I think that might be good enough. I mean, how big a production of these PC boards do you think you have to go into?
Well, you know, I would say I would do it not that often for myself because I'm always doing it for something at work, so... actually, right now I just finished laying out a mixer module that I was just creating. That's for me finally. I still haven't set up my etching system here yet. I had it all rolling at the other house, but now I'm finally getting to the point where, you know, I don't do it the traditional way. I do it with dry film, and I electroplate it, and then put a plating a tin on it, and then use a sulfuric peroxide etching, which just does a beautiful job.
Entwio.
K2UPS, J2.
Go ahead, Rich. K2UPS, go right ahead.
I've just been listening with interest over a lot of this stuff about all the different technology, and clue you in that I was out of here. But very, very interesting stuff, Dick.
I guess my real question, Rich, is what kind of a television set is in your living room these days? And are you thinking of changing it to one of these higher technology things you've been hearing about? K2UPS, K2LAW?
Oh, in my living room right now, I got a 50-inch, I think it's a Sony Aquis, or Sharp Aquis. I'm not sure now, but it's the Aquis TV. I'm very happy with the picture on it. It works very well. It's very thin. The whole thing is pretty light. I can pick it up without any difficulty by myself. And it replaced a 34-inch tube Panasonic TAU, T-A-U, that had a phenomenal picture on it, but like Eric said, that thing weighed well over 200 pounds, and it still worked perfectly. I couldn't give that set away because nobody wanted to move it. I went to all different churches and stuff, and like Boys and Girls Clubs, and stuff. I said, "Hey, listen, just I'll deliver it. You put it in your youth room." Nope, we don't want it. And I ended up putting it out at the curb. But what are you going to do?
A 200-pound television set at the curb. My guess is you have to call up your carter and make a special arrangement. That's not a normal pickup. Is that true, Rich?
That was true when I lived home with my parents in Town of Hempstead. You put out anything much more than about 40 pounds, any sort of furniture, anything like that that didn't fit in a can, you had to call up and make special arrangements. You couldn't put it outside before that day, a whole schmeal. Town of Oyster Bay, you could put, almost like a dilapidated vehicle, I think, and they would take it. Refrigerators, sofas, beds, it doesn't matter. You put it at the curb, it's gone the next day. It's gone on garbage day. They just come and take it away. No phone calls necessary.
Yeah, they do it three times a week, too.
That's amazing. Are you telling me you could put a used 85-gallon, I think it is, water heater, a used water heater at the curb? You know, something that is, something that is about 6 feet high and 2.5 feet in diameter, and they'll take that away? Is that what you're saying, Rich?
That's exactly what I'm saying, Dick. And if it doesn't fit in the normal garbage truck, and I've seen them take sofas, you know, full-size sofas, 8 foot whatever long, and put it in the end and watch this thing eat it like Pac-Man. If it's too big to fit in a normal garbage truck, they, I don't know if they have radios or cell phones, whatever, but then they call another truck that has like a hydraulic lift on the side. But they take it, no questions asked. You just can't put, I think, more than 10 items per day. I think that there is a limit, because one time I went over that and I got a little nasty gram in my mailbox.
That's why our town taxes are higher than any of the other towns.
That's amazing. So, is there a weight limit? I mean, these guys, I guess two guys at a time have to pick this thing up. If you put out a 500-pound object, I'm having trouble believing with that special arrangement they would take it. So, your normal weekly pickup or biweekly pickup, is there a size limit and a pounds limit? And in the case of a sofa, yes, the machine can eat it. In the case of a hot water heater that's big enough, I don't think that machine can eat it. Over to you, Rich, and to K2UPS, K2RIW.
No, the town does actually have a set of rules.
And they do, and the garbage cans that you put out with your normal household's refuse in it can't be more than a certain gallon size and weigh more than a certain amount. But the large items, you know, if they get there and they feel they can't pick it up, that's when they'll call for that special truck. And they probably do have a special truck that comes around to get the appliances for recycling and stuff like that. But, I mean, all I know is I remember growing up, and if you put anything, you couldn't put a car tire out in Town of Hempstead without calling up. But Town of Oyster Bay, different story.
Wow. Huntington's not like that. They're a little more persnickety. They'll take it, but you gotta call up and make a special arrangement.
HRIW, K6DPZ.
Go ahead, Al.
If you're near a phone, why don't you give me a call? I want to tell you something real funny over, not over the radio.
Okay. See you in a bit. I gotta go away, you guys. Bye-bye for now. And this is almost the fifth hour of the TechNet craziness. Boy, these people must be dedicated. Bye-bye.
Dick, call me on my cell, 516.
Yeah, the transmitter's got a little bit of a clickiness to it.
Cable 3, Dick. Eric, Rich, have fun. KC2WGB.
John, goodbye, John.
Oh, what were you using on 20 earlier?
What was that, Eric?
When you were talking to your friend on the West Coast in the 8th station, what were you using for a transmitter?
1000D, and I was running an LK550 with about 2.5 grand out.
Yeah, it's got a little peak clippiness to it. I don't know if you're doing any speech processing, but it almost puts little holes in your speech. It's very slight, but it's a...
During the processor a little bit too high. How is my signal strength, though?
As far as you go, I'm too close. I mean, the band sucks. I mean, the guys on the West Coast were barely hitting it still.
It wasn't coming in very good either. It was right on my noise floor. Yeah, I finally got the whole station, that part of it, working. The LK550 has three 3500Zs in it. It's a pretty powerful amplifier.
Yeah, well, I'd watch how you drive it because it's definitely clipping. So I don't know if you look at its output while you're talking. Anyway, gotta go. K2J.
JK16PC. I'll take a closer look at the Christmas tree. I got a station monitor scope on it. So. And maybe I was driving a little too hard. You know, it's definitely possible. But I'll take a look. I'll have to talk to you on the air when you have a chance. Fire up. What are you running on HF? Oh, you got the mobile rig. That's right.
Yeah, I also have a couple of other HF radios in the house, so.
I'll hook up with you on CW. I got that little transmitter I built. It really works great.
So I'm sure it does. All right, really, I got to go. See you later. K2J.
See you later, Eric. K2J, K6DPC. Dick, give me a call, and I'll tell you, I got my Christmas gift really early. WK6DPC, did you find my number okay? John, are you still out there? K6DPZ? You're all right, WK6DPZ, Dick.
W3NH. You guys are still connected on this end.
3NH, K6DPC Mobile, you copy?
Yes, sir. I copy.
One sec. I was waiting for LIW to give me a call on Twisted. You must be working on Echolink. I'm just on my way back home to home base. And I found there were some pretty interesting discussions on the TechNet tonight.
Yeah, okay, I just had it on in the background, this thing, and I noticed it kind of went dark real quick. Everybody disappeared. I guess maybe connections broke somewhere.
TechNet, from what I understand, is over. It's a good couple of hours, about 4 hours. And I just heard the first part and the last part. I was tied up. But they get into some pretty good deep discussions. They have quite a few intellectuals here that like to bounce it back and forth.
Yeah, well, I know I can follow them enough to listen. I don't think I can engage in dialogue, but it's interesting listening to them talk about the different peering definitions. The dark future for local air programming and so forth. So we'll see what happens. They've got the crystal ball on the table. We'll see if it comes to.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah, I generally throw in the simple answers. I do the quickie answers, and RIW does the dissertations, and John comes up with the questions.
Yeah, I don't even know everybody on a first name basis as of this time, but I went to electronic school back about 30 years ago, and it's changed a lot since then. I remember television back in the vacuum tube days, and I remember when they went through the transition to hybrid, and then Quasar came out with the works in the drawer, and that was pretty much the end of the TV repair technician when they started going modular. And now TVs aren't, it's not cost effective to even repair a set. You just toss it out and buy a new one.
It's plug and play keeps working. Now, I grew up with it a long time back, too. I've been for electronics a long time. I remember the old RCA 630 chassis. You remember that one?
Let me think. I can't remember it by a number. We are talking solid state, possibly integrated modules or something to that effect.
Old tube chassis. RCA came out with a tube chassis. They had synchro lock, so it was able to lock the sync. It was an intercarrier. No, it wasn't intercarrier, man. It was dual channel, 21 megacycle IF.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm probably a little younger than you at the time, so I may have not gotten into it that deep. But I remember there was a lot of advancement that vacuum tube sets needed to go through, so I guess they were one of the first. Oh, man, I go back... not repairing, but as far as using, I remember the old, we had an old square TV, black and white Philco, with an 8-ball antenna, 13.